Some people thought that he would get upset, but rather than being upset about it, he took the time to respond to the little girl's letter and thanked her for her advice, and that he would consider it. And he said, and hopefully if I'm passing through your town, I'll stop in and visit with you. So as it turned out, the campaign was scheduled to go through their town at some point in the future. And so the father of this little girl spread the news that she had received this letter from Abraham Lincoln, that he was coming through, and they began, the townspeople began, all the politicians, all the leaders of the community began gathering, making preparations for this visit from Abraham Lincoln, the presidential candidate. And they were all excited about this event taking place. And so they got the bands ready. They everyone wrote speeches, and they calendared it, put it on the deck. And so finally the day came that the president was supposed to be passing through their town. And they were waiting. Everybody gathered at the platform, the railroad station. They gathered there. They were waiting for the train to come in. And just as luck would have it, guess what happened? The train started having problems, and it broke down just outside of the town. Well, the president was sitting there, and the car was getting hot, and he thought, well, you know, why am I just sitting here? So Lincoln, who was not yet president, he got out of the car, and he walked through the fields towards the town and towards the little girl's house. He came into town and found the streets were almost abandoned because everybody was there waiting for the president, everybody except the little girl, the children, okay? They weren't included. So President Lincoln managed to find his way through town, found the little girl's home, and knocked on the door. And, of course, maid opens the door, and she's flabbergasted and couldn't believe that he was there. He introduced himself, and he asked about the little girl. And the little girl and her playmate, the maid's daughter, were in the parlor, and they were having a pretend tea, okay, and serving some hot chocolate, pretend hot chocolate, and doing how little children, eight-year-olds do, okay? So they invited him in, and he responded. He came in, he sat down to him, and he played with him, and they poured him some pretend hot chocolate, and he enjoyed their company. They talked for a while, and as he was getting ready to leave, he says, well, and pointed out that he had grown a beard and asked how they liked it, and everything went really well. President left the house and went back to the train, which was finishing up repairs, and they started up the train again, okay? And that, wouldn't you know it, here's the irony of it all. Here are all these people on the platform waiting for the train to arrive. And instead of stopping at the station, the train just zooms right on past. And they all missed the presence of Abraham Lincoln. Isn't that an irony, okay? Isn't that great? Well, that's kind of how I see Christmas. And especially the first Christmas. Everybody was busy preparing for other things, expecting other things, and what happened? The birth of the baby came and went, and everybody missed it. Everybody except a few, okay? But most people missed it. All the people you would have expected, all the leaders, all the people there, they missed it, except for those few that listened to the voice of God. I find that interesting. Let's look at John chapter 1. Because I think in this passage it tells us the same thing, the same truth, that when people were looking for Christ, they were looking in the wrong places, and they didn't recognize who he was. In John chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made, and in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." Now skipping down to verse 10. "He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of a natural descent, nor of human decision, or of a husband's will, but born of God. And the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." Let's pray. Father, I just pray as we spend these few moments reflecting on this idea of preparation for your coming, I pray, God, that you'll speak to our hearts and reveal to us what we need to do to prepare for this Advent season. In Christ's name, amen. So here we are, that Christ has come into the world, yet the world did not receive him, did not recognize him. And they failed to recognize him, 2,000 years ago when he was born in the manger. And I find it interesting that there are several groups that failed to see him. The first of those that I'd like us to consider is the secular world, okay? The secular business world is basically. They missed the Messiah's birth. It was a busy world. Think about it for a moment. If you remember the story, that Christ came, and he came into the world in a very innocent, in a very simple style. It's amazing to me that God chose that way, but still, that's how he came. In Luke chapter 2, in verses 4 through 7 here, it says, "So Joseph went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house of and line of David. And he went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. And while they were there," in verse 6, "the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them." There was no room in the inn. Aren't those words haunting? Think about it for a second. There was no room in the inn. Now, you can't really fault the innkeeper, okay? I mean, think about it for a moment. As we read, there had been declared a census. People were traveling. Think about it. It's very much like the Christmas season now, where people are traveling all over, okay? And their airports are full. The bus terminals are full. The train stations are full. People are on the road. The freeways are jam-packed. And there's people traveling. And there are obstacles. I remember one year we were traveling back to Tennessee to be with Ginger's family back there. And lo and behold, here came the snow. And we got airport ended up being closed. We couldn't take off in our connecting flight. We ended up having to spend the night in a hotel in Denver, to our amazement. In all of this problems, and that's kind of the way it was. Here were this couple. They were kind of poor. Probably traveling was difficulty. The innkeeper looked at Mary, saw that she was pregnant, and I can just imagine the thoughts of the innkeeper at that time. He says, "Man, I can't be bothered with this. This is going to be too much. She's going to end up having that baby, and you know what? I'm going to have end up, instead of being able to take care of my paying guest, I'm going to have to give charity to these people who can't afford it." He said, "So he says, I'm booked up. I've got reservations." One of the interesting things, we stayed at one hotel, and they offered a medical discount because we were attending the hospital across the street. Ginger and I, and we had to extend our stay one day because of additional testing that she had to do. And when I went to the desk to find out about it, and asked for an extension to extend it. The first thing they noticed was that we had that medical discount. And the gal looks over at her boss, and he says, "Do we want to do this?" And he's looking. He goes, "Nope, we have no room." No, so we had to change hotels. But God opened. It was a bit nicer hotel, cheaper, so it worked out okay for us. Okay, but the point was that it's interesting, the financial concerns that dictate stuff like that. And this was the situation with Mary and Joseph. The innkeeper was looking at all the finances involved. And he was a wise businessman in that sense. He had no room because they were all taken up with the paying customers. So he sent them on their way down to the manger. And that's where they found their shelter. Now, I think about that. And I think about us today. Put ourselves in the same position. How many times have we allowed that rush and all the pressures of the world around us? Today, what happens is we spend all this time, we're going out, we're preparing for Christmas, And we're busy rushing around to this store and to that store. We're busy rushing around getting the meals ready, all the ingredients, everything together for our Christmas dinner. We're busy getting our houses ready, putting up the decorations, getting all the Christmas lights up. We're so busy and involved in all the details of getting ready for Christmas that we fail to prepare for the child that's coming. And we miss him because we've put so much in the other details. How guilty are we of doing that as Christians even, but as a society as a whole? How many Christmas movies are made that don't even deal with Christ? There are love stories about this couple and that. My wife spends nothing from about October on. It's nothing but Christmas movies, watching these things. It's great. But, you know, some of those have very little to do with the meaning of what Christmas is. I love it whenever they finally do talk about the manger. And they end up in a church. They end up sharing the gospel message, you know, in some of those movies. And I love that. Now, as a side note, you know, I want to pose this, that I want you to pay attention in that passage that Mary and Joseph had their needs met. Think about that for a second. They didn't have all the desires that they wanted. They didn't get the presidential suite. They didn't get the welcomed in and have all the fancy treatments. They didn't get the buffet meal and all the other fancy things that sometimes go along with it. They didn't get royal treatment, but they did get their needs met. They had a shelter. They had a place for the animals or where Jesus could be born. They had the company of the shepherds that came to spend the time with them. There was a time. Their needs were met. God provided what they needed. And how many times do we focus not upon the needs, but the wants? How many times, as a little child especially, did we run to that Christmas tree and find that the presents that we wanted weren't there? When I was real young, my parents had kept all the presents for our family, my brother and my two sisters, kept them all in the trunk of the car that was parked at the curb, okay? And that night, a drunk plowed into the back end and ruined it all. We got socks for Christmas that year. Just a few little things, odds and ends, that could be salvaged. Didn't get everything I wanted, but I had what I needed. So many times we put more emphasis upon what we don't get than what we do receive in the message of Christ. And I find it interesting that Mary and Joseph had everything that they needed. So oftentimes in this society today, what happens is we allow that disappointment to begin to breed within us. You realize Christmas is one of the times of the year that people commit suicide the most. One of the times of the year that there are more mental health issues going on. And it's because people focus upon the disappointments. They focus on what they don't receive. And they'll spend that time, and that disappointment then leads to despair. And that despair frequently leads to bitterness. And we become bitter and cynical about the whole experience of Christmas, rather than allowing us to focus upon what really happened that Christmas. When God came and poured out his love in the form of a small child, he made it real. He became real in this world. Yet we're too busy focusing upon the secular entrapments of what Christmas is. So the secular world missed the coming of Christ, of the Messiah. You know who else missed it? The political world missed it, missed the coming of Christ. Look at Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2. Let's see if I can get there. You know, I put bookmarks in here, but sometimes they just don't help. Matthew chapter 2, the story of the Magi and their visit. In chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? And we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." And when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he called together the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written." And then in verse 12, I believe it is. In verse 12, he says, "And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route." It's interesting that King Herod, the Magi had come first to the political throne, to the political seat of the power. They had gone not to the manger. You know, we're oftentimes, we see Christmas and we kind of get the story mixed up. We see the Christmas, the manger scene, and we have the Magi here. And we forget that the Magi weren't there at the birth of Christ. They didn't show up until many weeks later, okay? And they weren't really here at this time. We forget that. I mean, they came, and it's important for us to include them in the entirety of the story. But the element is that the Magi came later. And they had not come to the manger scene at this point. They went first to Jerusalem. The source of the political power, that location where the government was seated for the Jewish people and for the nation. They went there. And what happened was Herod didn't know about this. Did you catch that? Herod didn't know, and he had to call in the religious leaders. Herod didn't know because he wasn't paying attention. The Magi went there because they expected a royal birth. They expected the political aspect to pay attention, but the political world missed it. And I can't help but realize that our world is the same today. We have governments going on, conducting business, they're doing all this other stuff, and do they even pay attention to the concepts of who Jesus Christ was? I see in our present government, in the United States, instead of promoting Christianity right now, it seems that there's an anti-Christian bias taking place. We see it occurring more and more in many of the local governments and all through at all sorts of levels. Not only that, but we see it in world governments around the world, that people are turning their backs on the Christ child. Instead of receiving the love that God wanted to show during that time, people's hearts are being turned away and becoming hard and missing the message of the Christ. Christ came to rule our hearts. Not the governments, not at this point anyway. Eventually that'll occur, but not at this point. He came to rule in our hearts. And we have to be willing to receive that instead of spending that time. Look also in Matthew verse 16, I think it is. See if I can get there again. Matthew chapter 2, verse 16, I'm sorry. Back in Matthew chapter 2, verse 16. And it says that you remember the Magi were instructed to leave. But it says when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Do you realize what that's saying? Instead of embracing Christianity, Herod instead turned his back and turned as an enemy against the Christ. Not only did he miss the coming of God's love in the presence of the Messiah, but he turned against him, became an enemy against him. It said about Herod, and I find this interesting, it said that whenever he was on his deathbed some years later, that Herod had all the political prisoners executed, that he had all the Jewish leadership and all the political prisoners. He had them executed as he was on his deathbed preparing to die. And the reason is because he wanted to make sure that the Jewish people that he ruled would mourn when he died. Okay? Because it was so focused around him. And I'm here to tell you today that I feel that our governments are very much the same. They've become against the Christ child, against the message of God's love, and against his work in this world. You know, we get glimmers of it. We get glimmers here and there. There's lights that go on when people instead of turning against God, they stand up and they support those values and they speak up forth for the values of who Christ is. And I'm excited about that. But I see so oftentimes that our world today is missing the coming of the Christ, even as we celebrate with all the secular entrapments. The other people that missed it were the religious leaders. Do you realize that? Here were the religious leaders, and they were supposed to be the ones who did see Christ. They were supposed to be the ones ready. In fact, I found it interesting that as Herod called them into discuss where the Christ would be born, they pulled out the scriptures and they opened it up and they said, well, here's what it says. But yet they missed going there and seeing his birth. They missed it. They knew. And yet they were still too busy to pay attention. And again, I reflect and I say, how much is our life like that? How much are we so wrapped up in the things of what we're doing in this world that instead of seeing the Christ, we end up focusing on all the entrapments. You know, in some ways, even with the religious leaders, you can understand some of what was going on. The conventional wisdom of the time was in a position where it looked and it says, well, we're not seeing a humble king coming. We're expecting royalty. That's why the Magi went to that to the place of political power. The scholars were looking for a warrior king. Many of them painted the picture that the Christ would come and he would rule as a warrior, conquering the nations. Okay? But again, he needs to conquer our hearts before he takes control of the nations. In the religious leaders, I think many of them were so wrapped up that what they were really wanting was somebody to come and pat them on the back and say, good, well done. He says, yeah, you understand the law, which Jesus was always correcting, but they wanted the affirmation, the approval that they had understood it. Instead, what did Jesus do? He came instead of patting them on the back and saying, oh, you're so good, you've done such a wonderful job. He says, you're all sinners. Every one of you have fallen short of the glory of God. He confronted them. He said, no, you're not following God. And instead, what he said was, you're not following God, but you know what? I'm here to pay the price. I'm here to show you God's love, that in spite of your rebellion, God has loved you. And he has that same message today. In spite of our rebellion and the things that we do that are against God, Jesus Christ is here, and he comes this Christmas, if you haven't already received him, to show you his love, to pour out his life for you. How could they have known and how could they have guessed how Christ would be born? But there were some who did know, and I just want to take just a brief minute to talk about them. Some of them did know. God invades this world at times, and as he comes into our world, what does he do? He reveals himself, he announces his plans, and he accomplishes his desires as he reveals this. And he revealed the presence and the coming of Christ to certain people. For one, Joseph and Mary, they knew. They knew that Christ was going to come. Mary was amazed when the angels made the announcement to it. And she believed. Notice that. She believed when she received that. Joseph believed. And the angel, when the angel came to him, and he would not, had he not believed, he would have broken that engagement. Instead, he responded and he followed that. Zacharias and Elizabeth knew. Okay, remember, because of the pronouncement, John the Baptist had been conceived. Zacharias, at this point, had been mute because of unable to talk because of that. And Elizabeth, whenever Mary came to visit with her, John the Baptist jumped for joy in her womb. Remember, she knew that the Christ was coming. She knew. And Simon and Anna, do you remember them? They knew. God had revealed to them. They were in the temple following the birth of Christ. And whenever they came and brought the infant child in to be dedicated, there they knew and they pronounced and gave prophecy concerning them. And the shepherds knew. Remember when they were in the fields and they listened and they opened their eyes and they saw the angelic host and they heard the songs that they sang. And they came and they worshiped at the feet of Jesus Christ. And the wise men knew. They saw it, God revealed it to them in a special way, and they came to worship. Wise men who were not of Jewish descent, even at the time, were being welcomed by God to come and worship, just like he's welcoming you and I, inviting you and I to come and worship Christ this Christmas. So what are we going to do? Are we going to get trapped and wrapped up in the secular celebration of who Jesus Christ is? I'm not saying those things are wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong to put up lights, to go to the parties, to have the family gatherings, to have the meals. I'm not saying that's wrong. But whenever we become so wrapped up in it that we miss the coming of the Christ, how are you preparing your hearts? You know, Mary and Joseph believed. Zechariah and Elizabeth believed. The shepherds heard and they believed. And John wrote, he says, and to them who received him, to them he gave power to become the sons of God, even them that believed on his name. Have you believed? Have you believed in who Christ is? And are you preparing your hearts for him? Not all the fancy adornment, but for him. This Christmas, I'm praying that we prepare our hearts to receive Christ as God's gift of love. Let's pray. God, I just pray that today, that as we go from this place, you'll take with us this idea of preparing our hearts to receive Christ. And Father, I know that many of us look back and there were times in the past where we received, some time when we prayed, we received Christ in our hearts. But I'm reminded, God, that every day